Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Storyboards with S. Darkholm. I am your host, Guy, and Storyboards is brought to you by a group located on allpoetry.com, the largest poetry site in the world. I always like to say thank you to Kevin and his crew for keeping the site up and running and giving us a place to share our poetry. I also like to say thank you to Deborah Lee for running the group and the blog talk page so we can geek out live. I also like to thank AP Taylor for funding the blog talk page. And we have shows every night, mostly every night. And there are different themes, different hosts, programs. It's free to join on All Poetry. If you just click on it, you can find a team of voices and apply. And Deborah Lee will let you in. You can follow along on a topic board. You can add your poetry, read along to the poems, and join in on all the group fun. Tonight we are focusing on The Haunting of Hill House. It's a great mini-series that Netflix came out with. And, of course, it is based on the book by Shirley Jackson, which is a great short story. I've read actually a lot of Shirley Jackson stories. And if you are interested in, like, Audible stories, a lot of her short stories are loaded up on YouTube. So you can also check her out there. And it's, some of them are just 30 minutes, an hour. Some of them are longer. But she's a really great writer. I would definitely check her out. As for the music that we're going to open and close with, it comes right from the show itself. And it's by the Newton brothers, John Andrew Grush and Taylor Newton Stewart, known collectively as the Newton brothers. They are an American film score composers, recorded producers, conductors, and multi-instrumentalists. Their works include scores for several films with director Mike Flanagan, having composed for every project of his since Oculus in 2013, and various other films and television series. In their early lives, both Andy and Taylor were inspired to combine music and visuals and seek a career in film composition. They are both accomplished musicians and multi-instrumentalists who can play piano, guitar, bass, clarinet, flute, accordion, sax, harmonica, percussion, organ, kazoo, and cello. I mean, that must be really awesome to have all those instruments underneath your wing. I could just imagine their household and the brothers kind of growing up to probably always have music on the sideline. And I'm sure that it didn't, you know, when you're learning to play an instrument, I'm sure it wasn't always always great to listen to. Together, they apprenticed under Hans Zimmer, who I absolutely love so great, and co-scored with Danny Elfman, another one of my favorites, on the Mike Flanagan thriller, Before I Wake. So it's a little bit of information about them. I hope you enjoyed learning. Like I said, we are closing with the music from the miniseries, and that was the first open, and we are going to be closing with it as well. So without further ado, I would like to invite on our first caller, as always, my unofficial, official right-hand man. Hello, Rack.
Hello.
How are you? I don't like to rope you in as a co-host, you know, because I'm basically pretty much in your ear, my co-host.
Whatever
it
says on paper doesn't matter.
Rope you into that permanent commitment, but I do appreciate all the co-hosting that you do help me with. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Wouldn't miss it for the scares.
I know. I really. Oh, now, so I'm. I mean, as you know, I used to do a show, book versus movie, and I would love to take apart the book versions and the film versions because it is very rare that I'm happy with book and movie versions. I'm often like, what the heck did they do? There are a few times I am happy. And I do understand why they cut what they cut, and I do understand it in that. But then often I'm like, why did they even change this? This is one of those rare exceptions that there are so many different versions of the Hill House. One of my favorite ones was, what was it? I feel like even like Ellen Rimbrower was even like a version of this, but there was the one, the Haunting was a good one. And then the older Haunting of Hill House, that one was really true. And even, well, the Haunting kind of changed it too. And with the one that starred Liam Neeson, that changed a little bit, but even that was a truer. And the original one was very true, but there are so many different versions of this that the fact that this series twisted around the book didn't actually really bother me because I already seen the book done really well. And with it being a short story, you know, I just liked their leap on it. Like they took the characters' names, and the characters in the book are adults. And even though this series takes two perspectives, it has them as adults and it goes back into flashbacks when they were younger, they weren't the same characters as were written in the book. They were just the same names. So they were completely different characters, and they were a family, and they weren't a family in the book. And they took the whole concept with the it being like an experiment where a doctor had them all come together and to see what they were going to do under the house. Like the whole concept changed. They basically kept the name of the house, and they did take direct lines out from the book and had them within the series. In fact, we just opened with one. They did make a change though, because as we opened, it said my family, that the house has stood there for 100 years and it will so for 100 more. And actually in the book, it says 80. I'm not sure why they changed it, maybe to fit in the time frame from when this was written till now, or maybe they just thought 100 sounded better, but they did change that quote. But it was directly, it was the ending line that the book ended in. That was the last line of the book, was whatever lived there, whatever walked there, walked alone. And I remember reading the book. And I mean, I loved that line. I loved the descriptions of the house in the film. I mean, in the book, and they put bits of that in the film, even though they changed it around. So I was quite happy. This is your spoiler alert. If you have not seen the film, here at Storyboards, I always bring clips. So, and I bring it right to the end of the season. I think it was like 8 episodes. And I bring it right through. So if you haven't seen it, here's your disclaimer. I don't think, I did leave some stuff out. So you'll still be surprised about some things, but, you know, there you go. So we do have another caller online.
Unmuted.
Hello, Hatter. Right. Unmuted. How are you?
I'm still a little groggy.
Okay.
I'm okay.
Good.
I had surgery today.
Oh, did it go well?
It did. It went well.
So. Good. What is it, outpatient? If you had it today, it had to be outpatient, yeah?
Yeah, they knocked me out, though.
Okay. Well, we can all be a little I'm like on a lot of Tylenol and ibuprofen, so we can all be a little woozy while we're on here tonight.
We'll start
seeing ghosts. I thought I just pulled a muscle in karate, but I think I really did hurt my arm, so I've been taking a lot of ibuprofen today and I might have to take a couple days off from doing anything with my arm. So we'll both be a little, by the end we'll be seeing Haunting. You know, have you ever seen any of the versions of the Haunting, Hatter? And you may have not seen this version, the miniseries, but have you seen any versions of the Haunting of Hill House?
I remember was the Roddy McDowell the first one? I think I've seen maybe two.
Yeah, there are so many. So you know the storyline, right?
They get locked in. They're all invited. So sort of like the Clue game. They're all invited.
Yeah, kind of not the Clue game, but yeah, there was a 1999 version. That's when I was talking about one of them, but. Are you talking about the 1963 one? That's probably
yes.
The one that's the most like it. It's black and white, yeah. So that
yeah,
one is the most like the book, yeah. I'm sorry?
Roddy McDowell, yeah.
Yeah. So, good, you've seen that one. Great. So that's awesome. I really love this one. And the thing I liked about it, too, is that it was like an anthology series. And so just like American Horror Story, where they had different seasons, but they had the same actors come back as different people for each season, and it's its own installment, this was attempting to do that. I don't know why they stopped at 2 seasons. It might have been because of COVID, I'm thinking, because this one just came out in 2018, and the next one came out, so I don't know if that kind of put a damper on production. I don't know the backstory behind it, but I wish they would do more because this one, The Haunting of Hill House, that we're doing this week, I really loved. And then next week we're doing the second installment of this series, which is a whole different – it's based on a different book, The Turn of the Screw, and it's The Haunting of Bly Manor. And I just wish they would come back with this anthology. I mean, they just did such a great job. And not all the actors came back, but a lot of them did, and I thought that was pretty cool. All right, so I've got some clips. I'm sorry?
I was just saying there was a lot of classics back in the 60s.
Yeah,
they used
Hitchcockian typing. Yeah, I went back and forth. I mean, maybe one time in the future I'll do the different version. You know, maybe next year I might do The Haunting of Hill House, the 63 version. And then maybe the year after I'll do the one with Liam Neeson. You know, there is definitely time to look at the different adaptions. This one, decided to go with these two this time. But I rewatched it and I realized that it's actually really scary, and I was watching it at home by myself in the dark. And I binge watched it, so I was watching it late into the evening. And then at one point, I just looked at myself, you know, inwardly, and I said, "Why did you do this? Why did you choose to watch this right before bed?" Because it really is pretty, it's scary. It's creepy. I actually thought this season one of the anthology, The Haunting of Hill House, was actually more scary than The Bly Manor. The Bly Manor to me was more sad, but this one was really, it was scary. I was scared. I was like, why are you doing this? I feel like the older I get, the less tolerance I have for scary movies. Does anybody feel that or no? Like, I used to love scary movies when I was younger, but now I'm like I don't want to watch this alone. I'm scared.
Each one you consume, I think, gives you a different perspective on the stories and the things that happen. So, you know, with every new experience, you know, it changes how you see, you know, the way other things happen. It could be like, you know, after watching one of these movies, next time you lose your keys, you're like, oh, you know, you start talking to yourself, to the house, and say, oh, can somebody please put the keys back where they came from? And then you turn around and you're like, you know, I know, I swear I looked there, and they weren't there a minute ago, and now they're there again.
That's great. You make a great point with perspective, because I remember I used to do a lot of stupid things, too, when I was a kid, that I wouldn't, like, go down the stairs and mattresses and cardboard boxes and go down really scary hills. And when you get older, you're kind of like, wow, I could really get hurt. I think this is more scary. So, yeah, perspective, I think you're right. But Hatter said he's the opposite. So you didn't like scary movies when you were younger,
well,
and you're liking them more now? Is that what you were saying?
I've never liked the slasher movies, that kind of scare. I do appreciate the Hitchcockian, you know, Hitchcock, that just give him a kind of syrup in the shower, she can scare the shit out of you. and I think a lot of those directors, and I don't know which ones, the ones that did Vincent Price, surely was able to do that. And that's the shadow people, Rock, messing with you.
Oh, yeah.
Shadow man. It's little gnomes running around your house. Little.
Back here in California, when I was growing up,
It's a little, the brownies, right? The little brownies running around your house stealing things. My sister had a ferret, and that ferret used to steal everything. She had two ferrets.
Oh, let me guess her name, Fanny.
No. Those were, I don't even remember their names, actually.
What was it? Beastmaster had the ferret.
Yeah, so actually, my brother gave us, at some point, my brother was getting, and we took his ferrets, and they were named after the Beastmaster ferrets, I believe, and now I forget those names, but we were just talking about that.
Romeo and Juliet was a guy and a girl.
No.
Girl.
What was it? I did a show on Beastmaster, and that was one of the options, and it was, and now I can't. Kodo and Podo. Kodo and Podo. That's right. Yeah. All right, so Hatter. well, that's the name of the ferrets and the Beastmaster. But just so you know, Hatter, I see you haven't dropped. But I want to just put, because Team of Voices, me being over to Team of Voices is something new for storyboards. So I just want to make sure, I just want to put this disclaimer out here. So sure. I know that a lot of people might look at my topic board and they might see I do a character spotlight for like every person. And they're like, wow, Sky put a lot of work into this. Maybe I should write a character poem or whatever. It is really absolutely not necessary. It's okay that I put all the work into it because I like having the information there. And I bring the clips and the fandom to the show myself. All you guys need to do is bring a poem. And if you even bring a pre-write that is about a haunting in general or anything other than the themes, or if you click on the quotes from the book, and you bring a poem that you think has, you know, is related to the quote, even if it's not related to the theme, even if it's a love poem, but it's related to the quote, I'm okay with that. I'm completely, you guys bring the poetry, and I really bring the fandom and the storyline of the prompt. So never feel overwhelmed.
Guys,
just bring what you think is related. I'm sorry, Rack, go ahead.
Sky does the work, and we bring the fun. Fun!
Yeah. Oh, Rack loves my buttons. So Rack said a magic word. So I'm going to have to bring Tyrion in here. So I'm going to play my first clip, and then I'm going to put my first poem up. And it's going to be Rack's.
It's fun. Look at the fun we're having.
Just love that Game of Thrones. And then I'll probably play another clip and another poem. And so it will give you time. Are you sticking around for a little while, Hatter?
Yeah. As long as
okay.
I can.
So, yep. So I'm going to do it that way. And then yeah, so I'll play my first clip. And then we'll get this show rolling. So this is the thing. I did the fun on the wrong, should open a whole new tab. Now I got to find where I am. Right? Okay, so here we go. Here is our first clip. And here we go.
Carl was driving on Rural 86 during the storm. Do you remember that storm? Oh, of course not. You were in L.A. It was a bad one. Just cats and dogs, the worst I'd seen in 10 years. He was up in the boons when he lost control of the car. He went over a guardrail and went down a ravine. The car flipped over and you couldn't see it from the road, especially because of the rain. He was hanging there the whole time. Hours. Upside down, tangled up in his seatbelt. They said he could reach the horn, but he couldn't press it for long because, you see, his arm was broken. And that's how he died. Upside down, pressing on that horn for as long as he could stand to.
So when did it start?
The night after he died, it started with drops of water, like raindrops, falling onto my face. I started to hear a car horn, short burst, distant, I think, but close enough to wake me. And then finally, now this was right after the funeral itself. This was the night after the burial, you see. I felt the water on my cheeks, and I heard the car horn, and then I looked up at the ceiling, and there he was, hanging there, upside down. I could see the water dripping off of his hair, and his face was a deep purple, like the blood had all just pooled into his cheeks. It's funny, you think you'd scream after seeing something like that, but you don't. You just stare. You just stare at it like you're an idiot. And then his mouth fell open, but it wasn't a scream. It was a car horn coming from his mouth, so loud that I fell off the bed. And then I screamed. I screamed because I hit the floor and it startled me. And it was like I only just remembered, oh, right, I can scream. I should probably scream. And I screamed all right, and I ran, and I tripped in the hallway, and I looked back and he wasn't there, and then I laid there and I cried. And that was the last time I slept in that room.
The mind, it is a powerful thing, ma'am, especially the grieving mind.
I know what I saw.
The water, the car horns. You'd be picturing how he died as much as you wouldn't want to.
I saw him.
When you push that stuff down, it comes out at night. You couldn't help it. When I said I've never seen a ghost, it's not exactly true. I've seen a lot of ghosts. Just not the way you think. A ghost can be a lot of things. A memory, a daydream, a secret, grief, anger, guilt. But in my experience, most times they're just what we want to see.
Why would I want to see my Carl like that?
Because it's better than never seeing him again. Most times a ghost is a wish.
Excellent. And that's really how the show starts. It's going through one of the kids as an adult, and one of the kids that lived in the house, and he is a famous author. Because he got famous off of writing ghost stories about the house that he lived in, but he doesn't actually believe in them. He kind of pushed it all down not to remember. And he just seen through his own lens of believing in it. And it kind of really brings in the perspective of how we grow up. What we believe and perceive to be true might be different from our siblings or other people around us, because we all have different experiences and in ways to deal with things around us. And he pushed it down. So he is a famous author now, and he does he goes around and he listens to other people's stories and he checks to see if they're haunted. And then he writes a book about it, but he doesn't necessarily believe them. So that was one of his interviews. And at the end he says, yes, I'll write your book, but I don't believe you. That's cool. I thought it was a really, even though it wasn't related to Hill House, I thought it was a pretty cool story that they opened up with. And freaky. I don't know, freaky. It was just like an opening scene. The woman really has nothing to do with the series, except that one part, and it has to do with the guy. And the guy is one of the kids that were in the house of the Haunting of Hill House. Because I know that you said you know the original version, but in this version they changed the characters. They're all a family and the kids that grew up in the house together. And they do flashbacks from when they're adults and how it affected them as an adult, and then flashbacks to childhood and them in the house. And so that was
sort of like
one of the boys. I'm sorry? Yeah. Yes, kind of like that.
Sort of like it.
Yeah, like that kind of, yeah. And then eventually they all end up back in the house. So it is very much like it, because they end up all having to deal with those ghosts as adults. So it is actually, yes. Yeah.
I was looking for something to put in front of me to read along, and I couldn't find it because it was very good. And then I figured out that you were sharing something famous.
And this is what I mean. So I know, like, a lot of, like, when I was over at a poetic place, you know, a lot of people, there weren't really part of the storyboards. So just so you know, Hatter, most storyboards, I bring clips of the actual film or the series or the book or whatever we're doing. So you can enjoy it and kind of say, hey, this actually sounds really good. Do I want to go watch it? Yeah, I do. Or so someone says, I have no idea about this. By the end of it, you might have been able to consume it, to enjoy it, and you have an idea. People like Rack, who is an audio kind of guy, he's like, hey, I can watch this film by listening to Sky's clips. So you can enjoy it and kind of get a feeling like, oh, this seems pretty cool. I want to go check it out. That's why when you bring the poems, that's why I say you really can bring any poem as long as it's mildly related, because I always bring the topic itself. So, and my way of doing that is the clip.
That's where we're heading. You know, poetry from just stand-up to spoken word to rant, the rants and to the Now we're going to get into performance.
Yeah, I love Pokemon. I've got a few of them, and they're great.
Yeah,
but they're definitely up.
Embrace it. Don't fight it.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say it's all where we're heading. I think it's more popular when you're in front of a stage to do performance poetry. I do think it is more popular.
Yeah, and when it's good. Like, that was totally enjoyable.
Yeah.
Well, you just played.
Well, I'm glad you like it. When I choose the clips, I try to choose them. I'm meticulous in what I choose, you know, and I make the clips myself. So it's not something that I just got on YouTube. Sometimes I do that, but most of the time I'm making the clips.
You're so good.
So I put a lot of time into it a lot of the time, so I'm glad you liked it. All right, so Rack has a poem, and it wasn't in the studio, Rack, but I was able to put it up in there when the clip was playing. So it's called Rewind, and I'm going to go ahead and press play to that. And it's on the board. Hatter, do you have it on the board? You refresh?
Running down the hall as you speak. Rocketeer.
Don't bump into anything.
The scissors. Yeah, got it.
Probably not a good
Rewind.
Idea. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and press play. Here we go.
Rewind by Raconteur. Sitting at her vanity, adorned in a diaphanous emerald camisole that exaggerated her alabaster skin, she gazed wistfully into the giant mirror. The room behind her was black as pitch, except for the dim yellow light underlining the crack beneath the bathroom door. Everything was quiet as a tomb, except for the rhythmic tick-tock of the grandfather clock. Keeping time with the sounds of the brush running through the waterfall of crimson hair that made her look like elven royalty. Her dark chocolate eyes were puffy and moist from weeping. Moments like this, her mind can't help but play the skeletons of her memories like a xylophone, trying to soothe the ghost haunting her conscience. Closing her eyes, the lines between fantasy and reality blur, filtering out everything except the innocent squeals and giggles of a child's happiness. This was the sound that anchored her to this world. The bathroom door opened and a man emerged, walking past her as if she wasn't there, turning her into a spectator, watching reruns in slow motion. A child, dressed for bed, came bounding into the room and leapt into the man's arms. He kissed her gently on the head and asked if she brushed her teeth. "Of course," she replied soberly. He said, "I love you," as he tucked her into bed. The child, now visibly overcome with sadness, said, "I miss Mommy." The man hugged her and said, "So do I, sweetheart. So do I." End story.
Excellent. That was a sad story, Rack. And I think after the clip I just played, it is perfect because it leaves you... And really, I mean, I couldn't be more perfect after the clip I played, and it wasn't planned that way, but wow, was that perfect, because there was a moment in this where you say, memories like her mind can't help but play the skeletons of, moments like this, her mind can't help but play skeletons of her memories, like a xylophone trying to soothe the ghost haunting her conscience. And the guy in the clip is trying to reason that ghosts are wishes, ghosts are moments, ghosts are memories that haunt us. It's our own conscience, and that's basically what he was trying to say to the woman, that we create these ghosts and these figments in our minds, and they seem very real, but it's really our mind and our emotions playing into it. And, you know, is that true? Is it not true? We're not going to go into the debate of that, but everybody has their own opinion. You know, people might say it is totally the people's minds, and then some people might say, you know, that is just a way to normalize something that is true.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's okay. It's okay, Hatter. Well, Go ahead, Hatter. Go ahead. It's okay. Go ahead.
I was just saying it's totally possible that, you know, we know there's other dimensions out there that we don't see, feel, touch, hear, you know, taste. And if a life is taken so suddenly, the soul doesn't realize it's been taken, parts or that interdimensional negative can be left. There's nothing wrong with that theory. Because we don't understand the dimensions, how do we know? So
yeah, we don't understand. I agree with that. I agree with you, actually. So but there are so many different opinions on that and different views. So one view of this is trying to normalize that, and I understand that. I understand that perspective as well, and that's kind of where that guy was going. And almost in this poem, it kind of plays with that, and it doesn't really fall on one. It kind of presents that the duality of it. And that's what I like about the poem, among other things.
Yeah.
But kind of saying, the lending on the memory on the it's her conscious, it's a haunting, and then is it really there? And it doesn't actually fall on either one. It kind of carries on both ideas, and I love that about it. And that's why I think it's perfect for after this. And I love how you don't bring into what's really happening until the end with the dialogue. Like, you're in the story, you're in it, and, oh, by the way, also the elven royalty, I really loved that, obviously. But, I like when stories, they come together at the end. And in this series, actually, somebody who's watching it, I have a friend, my best friend, she's very good at figuring out things in the middle. You know, when she watched the movie where he says, "I see dead people," she figured it out way in the beginning that he was already dead. I didn't figure it out till the movie told me. But she was already way there at the beginning, and I believe she was way there because at this end, they all of a sudden, because there's this whole focus on this red room, and they can't open the door, and there's this whole thing behind it. And at the end, it tells you the secret of it. And you're like, oh, my God, I missed it in every episode. I missed it. And so, but at the end, and it's like you have to rewatch, you have to, right there, you have to go, oh, my God, I need to go rewatch the series right now because I missed everything in it.
So
of course, she did. Because she got it. In this poem or the show?
The show.
Oh, no, it had nothing to do, in the movie with the I See Dead People, it was the guy, Bruce Willis. I'm jumping around the stories a little bit, but the idea, the thing that I'm trying to mirror is that in this poem, just like the movie, what is that movie called?
Sixth Sense?
Sixth Sense, yes. So just like the movie Sixth Sense, just like this series, The Haunting of Hill House miniseries, this poem does that same thing where at the very end, it brings the story, you're like, oh, I see what's happening. The mom died. Like, and you bring that in through your dialogue. And I like how you don't set it up. You just go through and you're kind of, the reader is just kind of going through and they're really living this moment. And then all of a sudden, and then even at the end, you don't tell us. You tell us through dialogue, and I really love that you did that with the poem. I thought it was wonderfully effective. Your beginning descriptions were beautiful. I loved the xylophone keys trying to soothe the ghost haunting her conscious. I loved that. I loved that part. Wonderful language. This one was really done well, Rack, and it really went with the topic. You picked a good one for the pre-write. And I know I read it before, but I love reading things again, so bring it every time if you want to. Absolutely fine. Hatter, what do you think? Yeah.
You know, dragging the kid in at the end and showing him a sad emotion was the right way to do that. that's got to be one of the hardest things to realize. And you can take that a number of ways, different how stuck is she? You left it in the reader's brain to finish that, I thought. Good.
Yeah, a lot of people were confused. If she was alive and remembering the father and daughter, because they're acting, you know, all happy and like they don't know what's going on. But she's sitting there and she's sad and she's crying. But, you know, what's playing out is that they're missing her. So it's like, are they missing her from the other side or is she missing them? So, you know, I kind of walked in down the middle of it.
Yeah, taken so fast she didn't know. Her soul didn't know. It was in it. And, you know, in time could pass differently at a different dimension. So that's another can of worms.
Yeah. Excellent addition. Thank you so much, Raconteur. And I will do all the plugging together after probably towards the middle, actually. I'll just have everybody plug it once. Excellent. Wonderful addition. All right, I'm going to play. And did you pick a poem, Hatter? Did you put a poem down?
I'm looking for one now. I'm going now.
Okay, so I'm going to play another clip, and then we'll drop Hatter's poem. And I just want to just put a little prior knowledge. So for people that haven't seen the film, and like I said, spoiler alert. In the film, the siblings, they grow up and they have problems, right? Their mother ends up dying in the house, and their father kind of escapes the house and takes them with him. And they don't really understand what has happened other than they think their mother has killed herself in the house. And so they grow up with this tragedy, and they all have their tragic stories along with it. One brother is an addict. His twin sister grows up and still remembers everything that happened, and she believes everything that happened. All her other siblings think she's a little untethered. And she ends up going, and you kind of open her story kind of opens the series, because she goes back to the house to confront her demons to say, I need to get over this. But she ends up dying as well. So, and then it's the same thing. Everybody thinks it's a suicide. But you'll find out, you know. So then it brings all the siblings together again. And they have to go to her funeral, and there's the whole thing with that. And then one of the siblings, like I said, doesn't really believe what's happening. And one of the siblings has like this, they're all kind of tethered to the other dimension. They're all kind of connected to those things that Hatter was talking about. And one of the sisters, every time she touches something, ever since she was little, can get, see the backstory or can feel someone's emotions. So she wears gloves all the time because it's just a talent that she has. They're all a little sensitive to that paranormal. All the siblings are, in one way or another. So I just want to give that background because the clips might make more sense if you realize that there are two brothers and three sisters, and they all are connected. And now one sister is dead, and these other four have to come together again and resolve their childhood trauma, right? So that's the baseline of the story. I wanted to put that out there just so that when we're listening to the clips, you guys have that base at least. All right, so I'm going to – it's a really cool thing. So I am going to play the next clip, and then I am going to we're going to draw a pattern. So here we go.
You ought to know why I did it. I touched Nell because I had to know. You know what I'm talking about. Don't pretend that you don't. You know what happens when I touch people. A part of you knows. It always has. I had to know. And I touched her. And I felt nothing. Just nothing. And it spread everywhere in me, this nothing, until I couldn't feel anything anymore. I was just this dark, empty black hole. And I tried to fill it up. I tried to fill me back up. And I called Trish, and she came right away, and I felt nothing. And then I tried to mourn at the wake, and I felt nothing. And so I drank, and nothing worked. I couldn't feel anything. Shortly after I touched her skin, I couldn't feel anything. And then we're in the basement, and the lights go out. And I can't see. And I can't feel. And I'm just floating in this ocean of nothing. And I wonder if this is it, if this is what death is, just out there in the darkness, just darkness and numbness and alone. And I wondered if that's what she felt and that's what Mom feels, and it's just numb and nothing and alone. What if that's what it is for all of us when the time comes? And then the lights came on, and there he was, and I didn't see him. I didn't see him. He was a light in the darkness. He was a life preserver in the ocean. I reached for him because I had to feel something. I had to feel anything. I didn't see him. I didn't see him. I didn't see him. I didn't see him.
I thought that was a great monologue, and I thought it was great to kind of contemplate what it is that death is. And obviously, the premise of that was that she touched her sister's skin after she had died, and that's what she had felt, and she didn't feel anything else. And it was just a really powerful moment. I thought it was a really, really powerful part of the series, so I wanted to share that with you guys. All right, so Hatter, do you have your poem ready? If you don't, it's okay.
I'm trying to find one that fits.
Okay, so you keep looking, no pressure.
You know what? I think I know, huh?
Okay, Adam,
so
you keep looking.
let me call back, because I can't hear you either. So I'll call right back.
Oh, I can hear you. I don't know what that was about. Okay. Oh, he couldn't hear, I guess, yeah. I'm just actually going to play my next clip while we're waiting for Hatter. It is a longer clip. It's my second longest one, and I usually like to break those up into the two parts of the show, so I might as well just go into it. This is, I believe, when they were younger, and it would give Hatter time to find his poem. And I actually didn't realize Stephen gave me a SoundCloud, so I'm going to download that, and then we get a poem from Sweet and Deb. So, I mean, we've got some more poems coming. So here is the next clip. It is a longer one. Settle in. And here we go.
My God, what a storm. We slept through it, I suppose. I hate storms. Hate them. Since I was a little girl. And this one. I slept through most of it, too, but it gave me the strangest dreams. I actually like them. They relax me. My daughter, though, is terrified of them. I hope she moves past that. I guess it's all about how we feel when we're young. It doesn't ever really change. I suppose not. When I was 12, my dad died unexpectedly.
I'm sorry.
Me, too. It was a car accident, and one day he was there, the next day he wasn't, and I didn't really know how to handle it. I just was numb. I didn't even cry. Not even at the burial.
That isn't unusual, especially for a child.
A couple of days after the funeral, my mom left me at home with my little sister, and I was sitting in the living room in my dad's recliner. Always made me feel so small, sitting there. And suddenly, it bubbled up, and I felt it all, finally. I started bawling. Dam just broke. And right then, I heard these taps on the window, rain. And I thought it was weird because it had been sunny just before, and it wasn't supposed to rain. But it got violent. I thought it had to be hail. Had to be making that noise. So I cried. cried harder. The hail came harder, too. I'd been through hail before, but not like that. Now, this sounded like rocks, like actual stones. One of the windows in my sister's room broke, and Janet shrieking, and I ran in there, and I could see it. It was rocks. It was small, black stones hitting the windows, bouncing up off the ground outside. I saw the stone that broke the window, too, right there on the carpet. About this big. And my mom came running in. And she was bleeding from her scalp, I remember that, just from running up the driveway she got hit. And she grabbed me and Janet, and she held on to us, and we rode it out. And as suddenly as it started, happened before, you know. Harrisonville, Ohio, 1901, it rained small stones over a whole town. And then once in Sicily, but that was because of Mount Etna, it spewed out pumice stone that fell on Sicily.
It happens in Revelations as well.
It does, doesn't it?
Hailstones as heavy as a talent, it says.
How heavy is a talent?
About 75 pounds, I think.
No, it certainly wasn't that. The world didn't end, but I always kind of thought, I thought it was my fault. It was me. I'd had the hardest, darkest feelings of my whole young life that day, and I just shot them up at the sky. And somehow those feelings came together up there in the atmosphere and fell right back down on me. When Daddy died, I made it rain rocks. These things make perfect sense when you're a kid. It's only as you grow up that they start to sound crazy.
What was it you said to me before? There are more things in heaven and earth.
Horatio. Dreamt of in your philosophy. They're perfect, aren't they?
Oh. They're the elephant's eyebrows, those two. And I bet you'd do anything for them. Ain't that so?
Yes.
So what if they was having a dream? I mean, bad ones. I mean, positively screaming memes. The worst of the worst. What would you do?
Wake them up.
I mean, a dream so mean. So scary. A dream about sick and sad and disease. And rot, and loss, and darkness. If they were stuck in that dream, you'd wake them.
Of course.
And keep them safe. No more bad dreams, no more screaming memes. You'd wake them up and you'd keep them just perfect. Just like they is. Wouldn't you?
I would.
Well, meet me, kid. I got a secret. A way to wake them up. A way to keep them safe. If they get stuck in that dream.
What is it?
Good night, Button.
Hey.
I love you so much.
I love you too.
Now, I want you two to get good rest.
What if I have a bad dream?
Like what?
Like the old bent neck lady? Like a little blonde girl in the woods?
Not the bent neck lady. What if I have a worse dream?
Well, I'm sure we can handle any dream you have.
What if I dream that you kill us?
What?
What if I dream that you send us away into the dark and we get hurt? Really hurt. You send us away out into the dark, and my heart breaks right in half, and I can't feel anything happy for weeks and months and years until I can't stand it anymore, and I have to die. And what if I'm so sad and scared of the dark out there that I put poison in me? I poison myself for years and years until my blood turns into poison, my body breaks down. You send us out there into the dark, and the dark gets us a piece at a time over years and years and years until I'm on a silver table. It's my jaw wired shut, and Luke is dead and cold on the floor with a needle in his arm. And it was you that killed us because you sent us out there in the night, in the dark. What did you say?
I would never.
Would you wake us up from a dream like that?
Of course.
And keep us safe?
Of course.
But are we safe with you, Mommy? Are we really?
What do you mean, sweetheart? Of course you're safe with me.
Oh, I love that part. So that like sets up the premise of the whole story, right? They're young, and the house somehow knows the future. Like, it does this whole weird thing. But it only knows the future because it's playing with it. It's like that effect, you know, in the Matrix. Would you have dropped the lamp if I didn't tell you it's okay about the lamp?
Yes.
That whole idea of putting stuff into place, because the house is trying to get her to kill her children. What is that film, that the house where the guy goes crazy? I mean, not The Shining. Obviously, there's The Shining. But there's the other one. Ryan Reynolds did a remake of it. It's very popular. The house drives him crazy, and he tries to kill his family. And there's, like, two kids. Oh, my gosh. Well, it's kind of like this. That house is the ghost. So you see the woman from, like, you could tell by her speech, a woman that lived, the woman who was the wife of the guy that built the house. They lived in the 40s. You could tell. She's like, they're having screaming memes. You could tell by her dialect. She's from an older time. She's trying to convince the mother that the kids are she's going to let them off in the world, and the world is going to do bad things to them. So the house is slowly but surely turning the mom a little crazy, so she tries to kill all of them. And so you can kind of see that happening, where she's kind of breaking down and having that breakdown. And the kids are saying these things that are happening, but they actually do happen, because, like I said, the boy becomes an addict, and the girl is struggles with her whole life with that, with mental illness. So you see it come through, and it's kind of cool how they lined it up, but I thought it was a really cool clip. I hope you enjoyed it. I see Hatter has his poem on the board. So Hatter, whenever, let me just check to make sure I have no, okay. So Hatter, whenever you're ready, you can read your poem.
Okay. I've been deep for this one. The eyes that watch too sweet. Blink. I think it blinks, doesn't it? It goes like this. The eyes that watched me sleep, scratching at the glass so I might look up at him. Winds barked with the demonic. Could you read this, guy? My eyes are bad today.
Yeah. Let me just take a little look through it. Yeah. Okay, here we go. This is The Eyes That Watched Me Sleep. The Eyes That Watched Me Sleep by Jay Hatter. The eyes that watched me sleep, scratching at the glass so I might look up at him. Winds barked with a demonic voice, whispered moans from above my bed, tapping frames, wanting me to look, whistling to keep me up, sleepless, and he knows it. I press myself harder into the mattress, laying flat. You won't think there is anyone here, motionless and filled with childhood fear. He can see over my headboard from where he stands. If I see his eyes, he'll look through mine. Picking nails on hardwood floors, He just enters the front door. No lock to keep him out. I jump from the ledge and hide myself behind the chest of drawers. He won't find me here. He thinks I'm in my bed. My brothers are doomed. Why did they not hear him? Silence speaks of how close he is. He's at the door, slowly pushing in. It in. In my hands, a wiffle bat and a lawn dart to save my world. I quietly roll marbles and toss jacks across the floor. I'll throw a blanket to blind him first. Wiffle his ears, then thrust my sword into his leg and run. What if he turns on a light? I twist the sun as fast as I can, caught by a shadow on an unknown man. What are you doing up, son? Crawl back in bed. I tell him he's outside. I told him what he said. Put the dart down, son. Give me the bat. Climb back to bed. But, Dad, don't you hear that? Turning around, the sun goes black into the nightmare. He knows, he knew I'd be back. And I thought this was cool. And I don't know what's with you guys picking perfect poems for the clips that I play. I don't know. It's just really, there's a word for that, right? Serendipity or serendipitous or, I don't know. There's just something going on. But first of all, this is great storytelling. I loved reading it. Thank you. And it also, before I get into the real comment, I just want to say it reminds me of a part of this series. The boy, there's this guy, the guy who built the place, he's really, really tall, and he just floats around, and he has this hat, and he follows the boy, who ends up being the drug addict. He follows him around his whole life, because the boy was given the hat and he wanted the hat back. So he ends up going in his room and the boy sees him and he hides underneath the bed and the sister's on top of the bed and the guy, you see this very tall, large man, and it's just so freaky with these long arms, and you see him looking at his sister, and then he goes over to the boy to find the hat in the bed, and he leans over. And then you just see the fingers come up and lift the blanket. And it's so freaky. And he just wants his hat back. And then he leaves the room. But then the boy keeps seeing him wherever he goes. Every time he turns around, the ghost is behind him, even as an adult and wherever he travels. And that's, and that's how he copes with it. He copes with it by doing drugs because he doesn't want to see the guy chasing him. So the part where the kid is trying to reason through what he can do. I mean, even I feel like I even do that as an adult sometimes. Like if I get scared, if I watch a scary movie before bed, if I watch the series before bed, I want my toes covered, right? You don't want to leave your toes out of the bottom of the blanket because then something can grab them, right? And I remember when I was a kid, if I woke up in the middle of the night, I used to leap. I used to be really scared. I used to leap off the bed because then if I put my feet down, nothing below the bed can drag me under, right? Like there are so many things that you kind of reason with when you're a kid. Like if I cover him with the blanket, is he going to see? What are some of the other things that you were saying in here? Like what if I get the wiffle bat? What if I do this? And planning. What if he turns on the light? What can I do? And as you go through the poem, you kind of say those kind of things. And the thing, too, where it says, where was it? You talk about the headboard. And, here it is. Laying flat, he won't think there's anyone here. Like, and that's the same thing, right? That's why you always get to sleep with a blanket. I mean, I feel like I still do that as an adult. If I get scared from watching a scary movie, I'm definitely wearing a blanket to bed because if you're under the blanket, nothing can get you, right? Like, but that makes perfect sense. But it doesn't. But when you're a kid, and I think even when you're an adult, like for me at least, if I watch something really scary, I still do those things. And it's something that I think that never goes away. And it's just a security and a safety. And it may look different for different people. You may do different things to have that security. But I feel like even when you're a kid, I think when you're an adult, those some of the things that you do to feel secure and safe, those things that you do, I don't really think they go away. I think in some form you still do them as an adult. And I love that you did this through this kind of lens. I also liked how you brought in the dad. Like, he doesn't believe him. Like, he, no matter what's happening. And was it the dad? Was it really the dad? Was he just imagining it? Or did the dad come in and then he didn't believe him and then he's back in and then the guy's back, you know? And so there's two ways you can really look at it. Really cool right hatter. Rack and Tour, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, what you're talking about with the blanket too, they actually sell weighted blankets. So that you get that extra feeling of comfort from the physical weight of the blanket, and they are soothing, calming, anti-nerve, whatever, therapeutic. So they actually sell those blankets as opposed to like regular weight blankets. I thought this was a cool Right Hatter. I like the idea of, you know, dad, it turning out to be the dad, because, you know, that's very Hollywood. It's like the kid's hearing everything. He's about to get killed, but no, he's not his dad. You know, it's like, but it wasn't dad. Dad scared him away. You know, that's what you find out later. But you got to wait till later to find that out. So right now, dad's going to get stabbed with the wiffle ball bat and the lawn dart. So, you know.
It's basically the true story. That's several incidents in my that sort of wrapped into that story. And I did have the top bunk underneath the window, and in the Bay Area, San Francisco, the wind blew all the time, and the twigs would hit the glass in the frame of the window and the screen. And I knew if I looked up, he was going to be there.
Sometimes explanations aren't enough. It's like, yeah, it makes sense scientifically, but your mind is like, yeah, but that's not it. Oh, it's like, I heard that noise. Oh, it's just the boiler cutting on. No, it's not. There's something breathing down there. Listen, I'm telling you.
My dad, give me the lawn dart. Give me the bat. Write the bill.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, excellent, really well done. Let's see. So what am I going to do? I am actually going to wait for my next clip, and I'm going to play Stevens. So let me put that down. I'm having multiple tabs over here. So I'm trying to do something while I'm doing something else. But Stephen gave us SoundCloud. Thank you so much, Stephen. And so here we go. I think it's written to the 1963 version, actually, of Haunting of Hill House. So it's perfect. So here we go. And I'm going to press ahead and press play. So, Hatter, do you have the poem?
I'll be there in one second.
You might have to press replay. I know you like to have the words in front of you, so I'll give you a little bit of a moment there.
Okay.
All right. Okay, here we go.
The Heart Races Neath Terrorized Faces by Stephen 76. In the dark and in the night, no saviors will be in sight, while spiral staircase winds, feel the chill from behind. Through attic trapdoor screams, corpse hanging from the beams, and the thick oaken door bends while the pounding spirit rends. End poem.
I loved the background music that he put to it. And it wasn't overwhelming either. It was, like, perfect. It was just looming in the background somewhere, not overtaking the words, which was wonderful, mm-hmm. I thought. And he described it so well. I mean, and the same thing, the clip I just played, they were, like, in the dark. And then if you send us out there, in the night and the dark. I mean, it's really, you guys are really kind of freaky. But I love how he brings in the visuals with the spiral staircase winds. I love that visual. And then, of course, through the attic trapdoor screams corpse. So there's only like four lines in here, but there's such a wealth of description that you're able to take this one moment and you're able to, maybe you don't know the entire story, the entire background, but you're getting that one chilling moment of that haunting where you're, and you get to see what's happening around because he's describing this, that spiral staircase and he's saying through the trap door. So you can imagine the trap door and not just saying, you know, instead of just saying there's a corpse hanging, he's bringing in other visuals as well. It's hanging from the beams. And I really like the addition of the thick oaken door bends. You know, he could have just wrote, the door opens, or, you know, or the door bends, or, you know, even, but because he put in a thick oaken door, I really love those little nuances, those little descriptions that really make a brevity strong. You know, brevity to me, it's a hit or miss, because the things with brevity is you can say something and it's beautifully said. And you can say, I went outside and I looked at the autumn tree and it was beautiful. And that is beautiful in itself. But once you start putting those descriptions in there, you know, I looked at the autumn pine and the clouds behind it looked like something. You know, once you start putting those little details, it makes the brevity so much more better than just, I went outside and looked at a tree. And you definitely did that here, Stephen. And I loved the mood of it. Really well done. Rackentor, what do you think?
Yeah, I think part of what he does is it's like playing with negative space. You know, you've got an idea from based on what he's saying, so you've got a lot of, you know, whatever you don't know, it doesn't matter at that moment because he's keying you in on a certain area of it. So you're filling it in as you go along, and that makes it cohesive. You know, and instead of, like you said, you know, introducing you to the body, he's describing what's around it first. And like any good brevity, you know, that gives you enough to carry the story through and fill in, you know, the details that he's not giving you and still make it enough of a story to be, like, understandable. So there's a tightrope, like you say, with the amount of information that you offer. Sometimes, you know, too much information is just like, you know, well, duh, that's what I see. And, you know, sometimes it's just enough information is like, you know, well, you know, but there's a feeling attached to what it is that I see. And I'm really not telling you what I'm seeing. I'm telling you what I'm seeing is making me feel. And that's the difference between writing a good brevity, I think, and writing just, you know, 100 words. So, yeah, he does a great job with it, like he does in his series, The Eerie Depths, available on Amazon.com.
It's so wonderful. Thank you for plugging that. He actually has, like, four or five of them now.
I know.
So, yeah,
I know.
He definitely – I love that you plugged it for him. Thank you so much. Yes, so he does. He has The Eerie Depths. Yeah, he has the Eerie Depths series, which is a really cool series. And Eerie Island.
We got the one Italian.
I'm sorry?
There was an Italian company in Italy bought one of his books, and so that makes him an international writer. So he always thanks one Italian.
Beautiful. Wonderfully done.
Absolutely.
Hatter, what do you think?
Yeah, it's you want more. He's learning to write and leave us wanting more to the story or the picture or the prompt. And that's a good piece. You want somebody wanting more something. Janet, Stephen.
Excellent comment. And I think now is a great time since what am I trying to say? Rackentor just plugged for Stephen. I think it's a great time to plug the show. So, Rackentor, what have you got going on this month?
Well, at the end of the month on Halloween, I'm just, you know, having like a monster mash. Just bring your favorite monsters or poltergeists or legends, anything that you could dress up as for Halloween, anything that just, you know, gives you that spooky feeling. That
awesome. Monster Bash.
Yeah, it's 10 o'clock on Tuesday?
Yeah, the 31st, on Halloween.
Yes.
Yeah. Excellent. Anna Hatter, what do you have going on for your next show?
I believe we did the open poetry, so we're back to a prompt that was,
it's your prompt.
Is it? Was it? Is it? It is.
Yes.
Oh, God. How embarrassing. Was it?
I'm going to help you out, Hatter. Is that okay? Can I help you out?
Absolutely.
It's the last
absolutely.
Crystal ball. So it's the last crystal
That's
ball.
Right.
So what I had said was it reminded me, that title, of Labyrinth. And when they were doing, when the crystal balls were taking her memories, and he was kind of just taking them out through that venue. I really liked that. So, yeah, it's a great topic. The last crystal ball.
Is that with David Bowie? Is that with David Bowie?
Yeah. Yes.
Labyrinth, yeah. Okay.
And it's on 9 p.m. on Saturday. So there you go. And then since we're going to be playing, well, I'm going to read for Sweet if she doesn't call. I did let her know that I am on later. I'm not usually on this late. She's bowling, so she may be able to make it. I'm not sure. But her – actually, I don't know. Let's see. No. I'll figure it out. I have to figure out what her day is. But –
No, I think that's
know.
A bowling name I heard.
Oh, really? okay. All right, so sorry, I'm reading a message. I'm really bad at the thing. So I'm actually going to plug all the next shows because Deb is going to call. Oh, here she is, and I'll plug them right after she reads. So, Deb, hi, Deb. You called at a perfect time. Oh, hold on, I have to unmute you. Hi, Deb.
Hello. Hi, how are you doing?
Great. You called it a perfect time. I'm doing good. I'm going to drop your poem, and then we're going to read you. We're going to comment, and then after your poem, I'm going to go back to plugging shows because that's actually what we were just doing. So we did Raconteurs and Hatters, and after you read and after I get you some comments, we'll send you on your merry way, and I will continue to plug. Okay.
Awesome. Appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. So let me just throw you on the board. Our Hatter, do you want to press refresh? I always try to make sure Hatter has it. He's very serious about reading along.
Yeah, I always make sure too.
Yeah.
Hi, Hatter.
All right, Hatter, you got it? Hatter?
Unmuted.
Got it. Yep, muted, unmuted, got
okay,
it.
Okay, awesome. All right. All right, Deb, take it away.
Okay, and I went to the quote page, and I found two and sort of combined them for Shirley Jackson. But one says, am I walking towards something I should be running away from? And two is, I am like a small creature swallowed whole by a monster, she thought. And the monster feels my tiny little movements inside. And here we go. As my eyes meet yours across the yard. Breezes swing the blooming wildflowers, curtsying to me as my footsteps pass by. And the sun stains the clouds opal hues, glowing as the clusters float on the sky. Birds in the treetops sing sweet songs as whispers surf the morning breezes. Then a chill hits the air, silencing sound. The blood flowing in my veins freezes. tummy butterflies somersault in me now. My pulse hammers thumping in my ears. Are those thumps a message to stay or go? Do I run to you or do I switch my gears?
Excellent. I do love the direction that you kind of brought this in. That's a beautiful picture. Who is that? I'm going to have to go figure out who that artist is. That's really awesome. I like how you open up with the breeze swing and the blooming wildflowers, because it makes me, it kind of sets up, for me, it sets up the whole metaphor, kind of like your whole poem, but in a one-line metaphor. Because where the idea of someone trying to decide which way they're going to go, it kind of reminds me of the swinging breeze. Which way are we going to land? Are we going to lean this way? Or are we going to lean this way? And then with the addition of the blooming wildflowers, it reminds me of someone who's maybe a little wild at heart and who's wondering, where am I going to plant my flowers to grow, and do I want to plant, or do I still want my freedom? And so in that first line, in and of itself, I think it really carries the weight of the poem. So it was a great way to open, for one. And again, you go with that metaphor throughout, so I don't think it was coincidental. As whispers surf the morning breezes, then a chill hits the silence and ear sound. And that reminds me of when you're trying to make a decision about which way to go, any decision, if it's about, you know, interpersonal relationships or career, like any decision you make in life. There's always that moment, if it's a big decision or are you feeling a little hesitant about it, there's all those, well, what if it's not the right one? And the chill in the air reminds me of those thoughts, reminds me kind of like being a metaphor again of those chilling thoughts saying, maybe this isn't a good idea and what might happen and is it going to work out? You know, those colder moments and those, you know, doubts, I would say. So and then following the blood flowing in my veins freezes, like, and what other could cause those doubts than fear itself? And that's what it is, causing those doubts, like fear of the unknown, of what's going to happen. So I think that you set up all those things really well through nature with the parallel of a person making a decision. And then coming down to the last line, do I run or do I switch my gears and stay? And what's going to happen if I do? And I like how you don't resolve it. And is that, like the reader gets to make up their own ending. And I really like how you end on the question mark and you don't resolve it. It was an excellent poem. Like I said, my favorite part was that you paralleled the kind of like nature to the emotions of this person trying to make a choice. And it was very subtle, but I really, really loved it. Like, I thought it was really well done. Thank you so much. And Raconteur, what do you think?
Yeah, I love the quote. There's a lot of philosophy involved in that. And the guts of am I running towards something I should be running away from, I think covers a lot of human emotion and a lot of relationships in general. Whether you're talking friendships or even love relationships, there's different degrees, different hurdles, and different obstacles. And even if you're perfectly sighted, that question comes up even more so. Am I running towards something I should be running away from? You know, some people, you know, I'm ignoring the red flags because I've got my rose-colored glasses on. So you know, just that simple thought is encompassed in what you wrote, the way that you wrote it. You know, you've got a lot of layers folded into the descriptions that you used and the way that you put it out there. So I thought it was wonderfully layered and emotional.
Thank you.
Excellent comment. And Hatter?
Yeah, emotional for a girl. Tummy butterflies, somersault me now. Well, no, there's nothing wrong with that. It.
Well, why can't a boy have butterflies? That's not Hatter.
I know.
A boy can have butterflies. All right.
I meant that with all respect. I didn't mean anything by that.
Go ahead, Hatter. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Continue.
Well, no, it definitely describes what she's going through. Now, this reminded me of I should have written that down. The sounds. It wasn't Langoliers. Didn't they hear that time approaching? Did you know what it was throughout the movie, Langoliers?
I think so.
Yeah.
But you know how sometimes
anyway,
you get this feeling and you either ignore it or pay attention to it? It's not always the butterflies, it's just that feeling. And
yeah.
You know, is it good or bad?
Yeah. But
it's just like you all of a sudden you feel like you're being watched. Same type of thing, you know.
Trust your gut.
Yeah, and how much do you trust that gut feeling that you're being watched?
Depends on how big the gut is.
Well, that's
a, well, thank you, Heather.
That's how great horrible comment.
Yeah. great comment. Great comment, Toby.
Thank you.
And thank you, Sky.
I have everything set up.
And I did try to find...
Yeah, while people were... I'm sorry?
I did try to find the artist because I thought the watercolor was amazing too. It was in a stationery collection for a wedding, but I could find it for sale and I could find it on Facebook, but I couldn't find who the actual artist is. So if you do, let me know.
I will. I'll definitely let you know. And I have all the shows, so I'll plug all those for you. And, oh no, I know who the artist is. Maybe. Is it? I'll have to see. It might be Aframov, but I'm not sure. I'll figure it out. But excellent, excellent poem. Thank you. Thank you for calling. Have a wonderful night. And I will plug your show for you.
You too. Thank you.
I've got them all lined up.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye, Deb.
You too.
Smiling.
Yeah. Okay, so I've got the shows in order. So I we're going to be going through the whole week into next week. So hold on tight, kids, because I'm going to be...
You're out of order. This whole courtroom's... Oh, sorry, wrong show.
This whole courtroom's out of order. I love that. I love that. Okay. That was... what was his name? Oh, I love that movie. The Scent of a Woman. The Scent of a Woman. I don't have that. Oh, no, that's not Scent of a Woman. That's Jack Nicholson. Oh.
Yeah.
I don't think I have anything from that. Oh, You Can't Handle the Truth. I might have that.
That's a different one. What was it? Newsroom
yeah.
or something like that is the Out of Order and or is it Star Chamber? Anyway.
It might be, but you know what, though? You reminded me of this.
You can't handle the truth!
Yep.
It reminded me of that, so we're going to go with that. Okay, so, in order, tomorrow, Sweet Discussions will be on Grab Your Muse and Fudgle Through with Sweet Pea. And so I actually know the word over Morrow. And I love it, and I've had discussions with Sweet Pea why this isn't a word after she put it up, because I was like, Sweet, I know that word. And I'm like, I use it. And actually, I don't know why more people don't. So I think it's so cool that she's doing this little bit of this show, because I often use in my poetry, as Hatter will vouch, words that are deemed archaic. And he's like, are you making up words again or what? And I'm like, no, it's a real word, Hatter.
it's vocabulary voodoo. She's bringing words back to life.
Yeah. Yep. So overmorrow is actually one of my favorite words. And I told her when she put this topic up, I said, you're going to have to do penultimate, because I love the word penultimate, but I'm the only one I know who uses it. And I'll say it's in the penultimate drawer. And people will be like, what? I'm like, the second to last. Why would you say the second to last when you can just say penultimate in one word instead of saying second to last? You take the three words and you put it into one. It makes more sense.
Or you
so
could, or
I
you
told
could
her
point
she's
going to
have to. Yeah, I'm like, you're gonna have to do one for penultimate because it's one of my favorite words. Okay. So she might do that, but she's basically bringing back. So let me just read her blurb. Actually, tonight's discussions: words that need to be reinserted in the English language. So she's got a lot of them down there, and they're cool and they're flavorful. And then she got a little bit of old English in there. And so just be inspired and write a poem. And I think Throttle Bottom. just love that one. So she's got a lot of them. So check them out. She goes live at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time tomorrow. And then on Friday, Liquid Damage will be on at 10 p.m., and if you're ready for some fun, she is doing open poetry and stupid jokes. She has a little bit of a fun. So she is on at 10 p.m. and bring a poem, and she'll have you read it. So there you go. And then on Saturday, like we said, it's Jay Hatter and AP and Deb with the
Last Crystal Ball.
The Last Crystal Ball. Yes, thank you. And we plugged it already. And then on Sunday, where JCA is back, and he is doing Sunday Night Murder and Mayhem, Black Widows, Part 2. It's on at 9:30 Eastern Standard Time. And it looks like he's got Marianne Cotton, Betty Newmar, Tilly Kilmick, Catherine Knight, to highlight, so go have some fun with that murder and mayhem. So he's got some clips there you can watch, and it will talk about true crime. So just so you know, if you like true crime, sick. There's the show to be at. Yeah,
sick
and then
puppy. Sick puppy.
So, yeah, then going into next week, kicking it off on Monday is going to be Deborah Lee, and she is Personal Prompt Monday, Dark Toni Morrow Art, because she went dark for the whole month of October to kind of keep with those themes. And as always, for Personal Prompt, you could pick a picture, and it's solely devoted to you. This is actually the first time I've looked at these pictures, and I really love them. I try not to pick them until I'm ready to write, because then I might change my mind. So, but there's some really cool pictures. Take one. There's a word bank, as always. It's optional. Oh, that's a frisky one. Okay. There's a really cool redhead picture. That's really nice. I'm just looking through them. They're really good. They're really cool. And so check it out. Reserve a prompt and write a poem. She's on it Monday, and she starts at 10. And then on Tuesday, I have two shows next week. So on Tuesday, we are still going down the tube. Really random stuff with me, Miss Darkholm. I always say Miss Darkholm on this one because Sweet always says I'm like giving her homework. So I go on at 8. I'm an early bird. I was a little late today because I had to do something before the show, but I'm usually pretty early. So I go on at 8, down the tube. Is awesome. I put clips there, and I'm doing something different. I'm gonna, because it's obviously Halloween season, and I love Halloween season. I'm featuring a story that I am going to play most of it, if not all of it, in sections like I do with storyboards, but just with a story. It is The Wind by Ray Bradbury. If you don't get a chance to listen to the whole he has all his radio theaters on YouTube. It's really cool how they did the radio theater. If you don't get a chance, don't worry, because you're going to get a chance to listen to it on the show. But if you want to write about it, just read up on the synopsis, and then you could bring a poem. It's a spooky story about the wind, like a sci-fi spooky story. It's really cool. It's very good. So that's going to be your first prompt.
I said totally tubular.
Yeah, tubular. He's so funny. you actually are. You're very clever, actually, with your puns. But I love Ray Bradbury, and I have not brought him enough. So I thought this was a really cool story. So like I said, if you can't listen to it, don't worry. I'm going to play it during the show. But If you want to write a spooky story or bring a spooky story, it will go with the wind. I also have prompt 2, Little Apple of Death, which I thought was relevant. These are actual real trees. It's from the Manchiel tree, and they are really deadly and poisonous to humans. So this is like a public service announcement, I think. But I also thought it was a little spooky about deadly apples for the season. And then prompt 3, I went a little folklore, and it's the puka. So there's this little creature, and he's got this whole background, and you can watch that and learn about it. So 3 prompts. We're going to have a lot of fun. That's on at 8 p.m. And then for the last plug, next week on Storyboards on Thursday, like I said, we're doing The Haunting of Bly Manor, which is the second installment of this anthology that we're doing now. It has nothing to do with The Haunting of Hill House. It's based on a completely different book. The book is called The Turn of the Screw. It's just another short story. It's great. I do like the series better than the book, I will have to say. the book was good. The book was good, but it was very much like a short story, and I really loved The Haunting of Bly Manor. And like this one, it changed the book completely. It just took the idea of the book, and it totally changed everything about it. And I like the book. I really love the series. So it is what it is. I don't say that very often, so take it with a grain of salt, if you will, because usually I'm like, the book is so much better. But I did not feel this way about. There was only one, Forrest Gump. I was not the biggest fan of Forrest Gump, the book. I thought it was another short story, and I mean, it was okay, but I really wasn't a big fan of the book. But I love the movie. So there are a few times that I will say, that it is opposite. So that's on at 8 p.m. And you really can just bring me a poem about haunting again. It's really okay because I'm going to bring the fandom. So write to any of the theme scenes, characters, and or quotes. So now I did a lot of talking, so I want to be quiet now. I did all those plugs. So I hope you followed along. There's lots of stuff in the week to come. So there you go.
And that has been quite unplugged.
Yes, that is the end of my public service announcements for the shows, except for one more, and only because at the end of the month I'm doing a special edition of Storyboards, D&D, Your Character, Reserve It, and Write About It. And I love it. It's really fun. And check out my topic board. So, all right. So I've got a poem by Sweet Pea. And I have another clip. So, and I see Hatter put down a second poem, I think. And if we can get to it, I will. If we can't get to it, I'll save it for next week. But I think we might be able to get to it. I think we might be able to get to it because I only have one more longer clip. Let me just get back to it. I have one more longish clip, and depending on how long 38, 48, we might be able to squeeze it in, or we can save it for next week. So let's see. My next clip. Here we go. So, like I said, there's a story about, and I'm telling you now, if you really want to watch it and you don't want to be, you know, some of the stuff that I've said before won't really spoil the whole thing, but this is going to spoil it. So if you don't want it to be spoiled, block your ears for like 9 minutes. But starting now, because this is actually the end. So the idea of this, the house, they, throughout the whole, when they were young, there was a room with a red door. And they couldn't get into this room. They didn't have the key for it. They didn't know what was happening. They couldn't get into this room. And you keep seeing things behind the door moving. And they keep going back to this red room. What is in that red room? They can't get into it. And you never find out what is in the red room. And then through this clip, you're going to find out what is actually going on with the Red Room. So pay attention to the clip, and you can figure it out. At the end, if I'll let you know in layman's term what happened, but it's really cool, and I think you're going to be able to figure it out through the clip. So please enjoy. Here we go.
I feel like I've been here before.
We have.
All of us have. So many times and we didn't know it. All of us. I feel a bit clearer now. Everything's been out of order. Time, I mean. I thought for so long that time was like a line, that our moments were laid out like dominoes, and that they fell one into another, and on it went, just days tipping one into the next, in a long line between the beginning and the end. But I was wrong. It's not like that at all. Our moments fall around us like rain or snow or confetti. You're right. We have been in this room so many times and we didn't know. All of us. Mom says that a house is like a body, and that every house has eyes and bones and skin and a face. This room is like the heart of the house. No, not a heart, a stomach. It was your dance studio, Theo. It was my toy room. It was a reading room for Mom. The game room for Steve. The family room for Shirley. Treehouse.
Oh, wow.
But it was always the Red Room. Put on different faces so that we'd be still and quiet while it digested. I'm like a small creature swallowed whole by a monster, and the monster feels my tiny little movements inside. Journey's end, and lovers meeting. Lies and made a fool of myself. And the very air tastes like wine. Everyone is home. We've changed so much.
For my heart.
How long has it been since you were here?
Longer than I intended. It was too hard to see you here this way, but I still had you with me.
Oh, love, that wasn't me. That was just you. What were you doing all this time away?
I was holding a door. Holding a door closed. I had my back against it and my arms out wide because I knew there were monsters on the other side and they wanted what was left of our family. And I held it so hard I didn't have arms left for the kids. The monsters got through anyway.
That's what monsters do. But not here.
No, especially here.
They're out there, in the woods,
They're out there, and we're in here, and the children are finally safe.
But no, no, they're not. They're dying.
They're waking. You kept them from me.
To keep them safe.
You kept them from the truth.
To keep you safe. Their image of you.
I woke up at the foot of these stairs, and I started walking. No more headaches. No pain. No day. No night. No now. No then. And I would dream while I walked. I dreamed of you. I dreamed of you and the children's laughter. And then I'd remember that you took them from me. You took them. And you hurt them, Hugh. And they suffered.
They did. They all do. And even if they're broken or addicted or joyless, or yes, even if they die, we have to watch it all because we're parents. And that's the deal we make. Whatever that life is, we bear witness.
It's a horror.
It doesn't have to be. I saw our daughter dance at our wedding. Her smile was like a light and it was reflected in everyone's faces. And I recognized that light because it was ours. We did that. We loved each other so well that it spread out into the universe and we created a new star.
Stars die. The night sky is full of dead stars. They explode to death. And if you could reach up with some great hand and pull them down just before they burst, you would.
Yes, I would.
We're all safe now. This is our forever house. It always was. Nothing bad will ever touch them ever again.
Nothing good will either. Open that door. I know you can open that door. I know you love the people in that room more than anything.
I won't let you take them away again. They'll die.
They will die if they stay. They're dying now. Our babies are dying. Let them go. You have always said that our job was to send them sailing.
That was a dream.
Out into the world.
A dream.
Into the world. Let them go.
I'll be alone again.
If it wasn't for the kids in that room, I would have laid down with you. I would have followed you right into the darkness. But those kids live. But those kids in that room, if you open that door right now, I will make a promise to you that I will keep forever. Open the door. Please, let me fix this.
Awesome. So if you were kind of following the beginning of the story, you know, I said the mom ended up dying, and so, and the dad took them out of the house and saved the kids when they were little, and now when they're older, they all got called back to the house. They're all in the room. In the red room, the door that they couldn't open, they realized throughout the whole series they were all utilizing a room, and they did a little hint. There was a person who worked as the housekeeper, and then every time one of the kids said, oh, I was in the treehouse, the woman would go, where? And it was so subtle that I missed it. And, you know, then one of the kids would go, where were you? I was in my dance studio. And then the girl would go, where? And then they would just move on. And so every time one of the kids said they were somewhere in this room, that because the house is full of, and you never think about it because the house is so big, it probably has lots of rooms. But you see them in the room throughout the whole show, and it really was the same room. It was a red room. So they really were getting in there, but they didn't realize that it was the red room. And that's where they all end up in the end when they're trapped, and their mom's the ghost, obviously, saying, you know, I would like to keep them, and then dad's talking them down. So it was just really cool how in the end they brought that whole red door back into the storyline, and then you see through it a different lens the whole show. So it was really cool how they did that. So that is my last clip besides the two-minute one we're going to be closing out with. I do have Sweet Pea. I'm so excited she called because you have perfect timing. Hi, Sweet Pea.
Yay. Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey.
Hello, Sweet. Won't you dance with
me? I'm so glad I ended up pushing my show. I'm usually in bed by now, but I pushed it, and it really worked out because I saved you for last, and now you get to read it to me. Perfect.
I do. And I wrote to the quote, all I could think of when I got a look at the place from the outside was what fun it would be to stand out there and watch it burn.
Oh, yes. I remember that one.
So this is Burn It Down. The flesh of homes rot as streets decay, but good bones still stand in rows. Revival schemes save the day in fresh coats of white picket fence fantasy. Brass fixtures and new lights brighten old rooms with wooden floors and new carpet smells. Shop in boutiques, niche restaurants and studio coffee shops. A respectful neighborhood for plastic people, unaware of the ghosts that piss on their sidewalks, living in the devil's black hole, bound in silence. I stand outside the gates of fake paradise and I cry. Would anyone read the messages I receive from the monsters inside my closet? The third house to the left on street number 10, where the grass never turns green and all the birds die when they fly into the trees. From my pocket, I took a match and poured some gasoline. I had to end the evil that bled into the street. Watching paradise burn, I smiled as I heard the pain in its scream. Thank you.
Excellent. Oh, this one I feel like has a lot of parallels, like a lot of, like, you know, deeper meaning metaphor type thing, because you could really take it into when you, first of all, I love how you speak of the flesh of homes, because one of the recurring things in this book, and the clip I just played too, had direct lines, quotes from the book itself too, and the biggest thing about the book, and they brought into this to the series, even though they were not true to the storylines, they were true to the words. And one thing I liked about it is they kept going back, like, the house is alive, it is flesh, it is bones, it has a heart, and they really honed in on that. And I love how you put that in your own way in the beginning with the flesh of homes, rot as streets decay, and as you go on and you tell the story. And you speak of white picket fences, a fantasy. It reminds me of something much more. I mean, and you can think of, you can say, well, you could be talking about a haunting, or you could be talking about this or that. But the way that I took it was that sense of perfection. Let's paint our fences white. Let's have a, you know, pink song, family portrait, right? Let's put on our smiles and our good clothes and walk out and be presentable to the world. But what's really happening underneath? You know, you can have those brass fixtures, and you can redo, like, with wooden floors or the new carpet. You can lay down new carpet. You can fancy things up, your life up, and you can take that as into a physical home, or you can even take it as in a person who makes themselves look presentable but is actually not very good. Or you can take it into a family situation, and where you say a respectful neighborhood, plastic people, those fake people. And we all I think, have those in our lives. We all see those things. And when, so when you get down to that I stand outside the gates of a fake paradise and cry, it reminds me, not reminds me, but it makes me think of, you know, kind of growing out of that and seeing how things really are. Like, okay, there is this situation happening in this home that looks so pretty, but it really had such darker things in it that were hidden in the closet, those secrets, and what was behind those floorboards. And actually, this is even more perfect than to the show too than you think, because there, I did not bring, someone's making a lot of noise, so I'm just going to mute everybody, so, because I don't want to. there was a darker storyline in this show, and I didn't really bring it to the clips because I thought it was very, very dark. And it was one of the characters was able to, as I already said, one of the characters was able to touch people and to be able to see their memories, their feelings, and to see what's happening in insight. And she ended up being a child psychologist. And one of the cases, it was really hard for her to break because usually she would just touch the child's skin, and she avoided touching anybody. But if she couldn't get through the child, she touched and kind of see what they were feeling even though they couldn't tell her, and she would be able to help them. One of the kids had a really, they built so many walls up that she couldn't see anything. And so she ends up, all the kid said was that Mr. Smiley's there. And she goes, and they're in a foster care system. And she goes and makes a house visit. And she realizes that the child is being abused, and that the person, the dad, who was always smiling and putting on this representation of happiness and a happy family, was actually, this whole darker thing was happening. And she was able to get the kid out of the home. And so when you read this poem, not only does it stand alone, but it actually reminds me of a part of this, a part of the show, where the person and the family is presenting to be a white picket fence, perfect, happy, and there are so many things that are rotting underneath that are so wrong. So it really reminded me of that. And then the idea of saying, I'm going to pour gas on and burn it down. I'm going to take out that anger and take out and put it behind me, and give it to you that it's due, right? This is really, really well done. I liked the parallel in the dark. I don't know if that's where you were going with, but that's definitely how I read it or how I listened to it. And really well done, sweet.
Thank you very, very much. I was going with the fact that, I mean, I had other ideas, but I went with this because I love the quote of watching something that was evil in your childhood, which is kind of where I was going, only from actually personal experience, where the childhood home that I lived in were a lot of things happened to me in, like the ghosts, the attic ghosts and all that. That I've done, that you know about, that house mm-hmm. was actually burned to the ground. So when I went back in my adult life, that house had already burned to the ground. So it was just kind of that parallel world where I had gone the one time and that there was nothing but a barren field and the house had burned to the ground. And then the next time when I was in that neighborhood, it's all this fancy little upgrown house around the lake, and they turned it into something that doesn't look real to me because I know it as just this, from my, just this homey little neighborhood, and now it's this preppy little revamped place that doesn't make sense to me.
You know what it was built on.
Right.
You know what it's built on, yeah. Excellent. Rack and Tour, what do you think?
Yeah, I love that idea. It puts house hunting in a whole new perspective. Because, anyone that's ever bought a house, you got to find the perfect one. The bathroom has to be positioned this way, or, it needs a double bowl sink, or it needs a lot of work. There's a lot of personality, a lot of personification that goes into it. And, everything that's attached to all of that, the intangibles, and the idea of, I just want to burn it to the ground, that speaks to the history of it. And it is so relatable because, I mean, whether you're talking about a house or sometimes, again, personification, you can personify a house as a person, or you could be literally talking about a person. It's like, I just want to punch him in the face. And we all know that person. I can relate that to the house, to looking at the house and wanting to watch it burn to the ground too. It's like, I want to get rid of that memory. I want to wipe it out. I want to destroy it in the most violent manner possible and leave nothing but ash and then blow the ashes to the wind and scatter them to the four corners of the earth. I like that thought. And yeah, would that we could do shit like that.
Thanks, Rack.
Excellent. Excellent comment. Thank you, Rakator. And Hatter?
Yeah, they just had a news story of this guy who lost his
his house to his wife in the court. So before he could be evicted, he took a bulldozer it to the ground. It was still his house. Legally, he could get away with that. And I know Sweet didn't mean anything by it, but in California, the second town that was overrun and burned, lost 100 people, was Paradise, California. So that Indian had a...
I had no idea of that.
I figured you didn't. Yeah, but yeah, nicely done.
Hey, Sweet Pea, is it 3 old farts in a tart?
I'm sorry, what?
3 old farts in a tart?
Yeah, 3 old farts in a tart.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. You're welcome.
Okay, Sweetie, I'm so glad that you were able to call in. I did plug your show. I plugged all the shows. I took a good portion. We are over our time. Would you like to plug, or are you happy with me plugging? Because we're out.
I'm happy with what you did. I'm sure you did a beautiful job for me, especially the old English words, because I know you're excited about that show.
I did. I expressed my excitement. So thank you so much for calling in and for being. I'm so glad you were able to make it. I had such a fun time tonight. I had so much fun. So thank you, Raconteur, Hatter, Deborah Lee, Steven 76, and of course my Sweet, for all calling in and contributing and writing and having fun and conversation with me. Time really flies by, and it's past my bedtime, and I'm gonna, turn into a pumpkin soon, so I'm going to head out. I do have a one last closing clip that leads into the closing song. So I hope you enjoy, and thank you, everyone.
Good night.
Okay, good night. Okay, oh, and I have to actually press the clip, don't I? Okay. I totally lost her. I should have been doing that while I was right? I should have been doing that. Of course I wasn't. Of course I was not. Okay, here we go.
Oh, I'm alive. The angels lie.
Fear.
As I burn her down.
Fear is the relinquishment of logic. The willing relinquishing of reasonable patterns.
I will stay.
We're here.
If I will, I'm going on fire. Let my anger take me there.
But so, it seems, is love. Love is the relinquishment of logic.
This old house, she's quite the key.
The willing relinquishing of reasonable patterns. We yield to it, or we fight it, but we cannot meet it halfway. Without it, we cannot continue for long to exist sanely under conditions of absolute reality. Hill House, not sane, stands against its hills holding darkness within. It has stood so for 100 years and might stand 100 more.
I will go.
Within, walls continue upright. Bricks meet neatly. Floors are firm. And doors are sensibly shut. Silence lay steadily against the wood and stone of Hill House.
If I go, I'm going free.
And those who walk there,
let my darling take me.
Walk together.
Excellent. I really enjoyed that soundtrack. Well, Hatter, I hope you have a beautiful night and a beautiful day tomorrow, and best for your recovery, okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. All right, everybody. Good night.